But of course, you see New Jersey. They've raised the reward on her to $10 million. The FBI put her on the most wanted list, et cetera. So they're clearly after her. But I'm completely confident, as Marty is, that the Cubans will not have her extradited to the United States.
We will.
If Dantz is indicted, that'll be helpful.
What?
And
I'm sorry.
We'll link to our pieces. What did you say?
If Menendez is indicted, that'll be helpful.
We'll link to our pieces on Assata Shakur at democracynow.org. That does it for our show. Michael Ratner, thanks so much for joining us. President Emeritus of the Center for Constitutional Rights and Chair of the European Center for Constitutional and Human Rights. As well, Martin Garbus, thanks so much for being with us. Leading attorney in this country. That does it for the broadcast. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltzer, Amate, Nirmin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Robbie Karen, Dina Guster, Amy Littlefield. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Our website's democracynow.org. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronek, station advisor here at WHFR.fm, station making waves. And this show is all about news, but not your usual sort of news you hear on any other station, because we're independent, non-commercial, all volunteer student staff, with the exception of yours truly and two others. We are here to give you local news that is more in-depth and more extended. Like last week, we had a great interview on the show with local representative, Michigan representative, George DeRaney. And we talked to him for almost the full hour. Now, where else are you going to get that opportunity to even listen in on a discussion with your officially elected local representative to the legislature in Lansing? Well, nowhere else, of course. So we're happy to be here, and yes, we are going to have some special holiday programming on WHFR this year at various times. We had a couple shows yesterday, and especially on Christmas Eve Day and Christmas Eve Night and Christmas Day, all the way through to the morning of the next day, in fact, the 26th, we're going to be running our special winter season celebration shows, and those are a special one, very special, 1 hour long each, shows done by a couple of our DJs, and mixing up the formats and featuring music of the holidays. So whether it's just winter music, or whether it's Christmas or New Year's or some other sort of great wishes like peace to all, goodwill to men, of goodwill, of course, whatever, and some individual stories about what people are doing for the holidays here. It's pretty interesting. It's sort of a tradition here at WHFR, and we're getting ready for our 30th birthday tomorrow. Well, it's not our 30th birthday, but it's beginning our 30th year of existence as a broadcast radio station, and a very special 30 years it's been, thanks to you, our loyal listeners, all along the way. And, of course, our thousands of different student and volunteer staff members. And so, anyway, we're looking forward to a great year in 2015. And there's many ways it can be better than 2014, both for WHFR, I think, and for all of us. So let's hope for the best, because the opportunity is there. It's coming up. Actually, it comes up every day. So my best to you. Looking at the news headlines, we'll get into some holiday stuff a little bit later on in the show. I have a couple of spirited spoken word readings that I'm going to be doing myself. Oh, my goodness. I know how to read. I know how to speak. So I guess I can do some readings. And I think you might be entertained by that. In addition, some other special news. Anyway, you've heard on, if you're listening to the radio or you go on the internet or you watch television early this morning, you realize that our Michigan legislature has finished now their so-called lame duck session. A lot of bills were passed. Only the couple bigger ones are what I have in front of me right here. And the largest one, the one that really only concluded officially about 4 or 5 this morning, a.m. this morning. If our legislature would only work so hard the rest of the year. That's all I can say about that. Anyway, they did pass a transportation funding plan, which incorporates several major issues. I'll try to sum it up for you. And this is from the American Federation of Teachers. They have a legislative update that they send to their teachers, and we're proud to say we have two different AFT locals, one for full-time teachers and one for part-time teachers here at Henry Ford College. They're great unions. I've been a part of them for, I've actually been a member of both of them. I'm an adjunct faculty member now, and so I've been part of both of them, and they are very representative, very democratic, and they are for good things in education, not just, pay increases that aren't justified. I wish there were some more of those, but even unjustified, but nonetheless, great unions and helping the college in many, many ways over the years. In any event, here's a story from the AFT about the legislature and what their transportation funding plan is all about. And you'll hear more about it in the upcoming weeks and leading into next May, too. Here it is. Number one, it would increase the state sales tax to 7%. Now, this mentioned May. Well, it's going to go on the ballot. Our legislators were too chicken to find money anywhere else to fix the roads, basically. Dems and Republicans finally got this compromise to let you decide in May to tax yourself a little more on sales tax. From 6% that it currently is to 7% sales tax when you buy things. Okay. Governor Snyder has said about this proposal, although there are several ins and outs of it. There's some giveaways, takeaways that I'll mention that may ameliorate it. That's what a compromise does, is try to ameliorate all the bad stuff. Okay. And the bad stuff is you'll be paying more in state sales tax if you approve of it. But as Governor Snyder said himself a couple weeks ago when this idea first came up, we need to fix the roads now. We can't wait till May. And in fact, even in May, if it's approved, the money won't start flowing. So we're going to have terrible roads getting worse and worse through this winter and maybe even through next winter. Before we'll even if you pass this, the roads are not going to be fixed for at least a year, if not a year and a half, which means they'll be in just a mess. A terrible mess. Talk about holes. Talk about broken axles. Talk about traffic accidents. Year and a half? Yeah. That's because our legislators couldn't do it. And they could have. There were several ways. Even the conservative think tank, Mackinac Center or Mackinac Center, whatever they call themselves. And again, I remind you that a conservative think tank, that phrase, it's an oxymoron. Look it up. Oxymoron. Because you can't be a true thinker, that is an open-minded thinker, which is the only kind to be, if at the outset you're only thinking about doing it in a conservative way. Same problem with liberal think tank. Oxymoron. Can't happen. You can't be a real thinker considering all possibilities, all the evidence, if you have a bias at the outset that you clearly state and that you've been hired to protect, in fact. So, but they had this idea. They said, look, we have proposals right here. In fact, it's in the local paper, Press and Guide, one of their, or Times Herald, whatever, one of their editorial comments from the Mackinac Center for Public Policy in Michigan. They said, look, we can save millions of dollars in the current budget that you can put to good purpose, like maybe fixing the roads, without raising taxes. Okay? Now, if you look at the details, I mean, the summary that's in the newspaper, which I won't share with you because it's so general, you might say, yeah, let's do that. Yeah, let's save money in all these places. Thank you, Mackinac Center. Yeah, when we see the details of what they're proposing, it's going to cut things that, in fact, each of you would probably agree to most of them you don't want cut, that you can't believe that they're even suggesting that. Do you know what the legislature did? They cut another $7.5 million out of the Michigan Department of Social Services. That's right. That's the Help to Poor People department in Michigan. And they may even have to fire people in that department themselves, because the legislature wouldn't fully fund the Michigan Department of Social Services in these difficult times, in a state that's got the highest rate of unemployment in the whole United States. They cut $7.5 million out of Department of Social Services budget. And they may even have to fire some people in that department. That's how crazy that is. So I'm not saying the Mackinac Center recommended that. They probably did, actually, knowing how they don't believe that poor people deserve any help at all. Because it's all their fault, isn't it? I'm saying that satirically. Satirically. Look it up. Okay. In any event, even Governor Snyder said, this is crazy. Now, he's probably going to sign it because politics being what it is, the best they can hope for. Here's the other details. So if you approve of it, number one, in May 15th, I think is the actual, circle it on your 2015 calendar, increase the state sales tax to 7%. Now, when fully phased in, and it's going to take 3 years, it will generate $1.2 billion in new transportation funding. Now, it's not all going to go to roads and bridge repair. We'll talk about that. But it's going to take 3 years. So, you know how I said back there that Snyder, we got to fix these roads now? That if we wait, it's even going to cost more than $1.2 billion a year? And we'll need that $1.2 billion for 10 years to even get back up there? Well, because he proposed that actually 2 years ago, current estimates say that the roads, when they get really bad, they cost even more to fix. Sometimes you have to totally tear up the old one and put in a new one. You can't just patch it. So now the estimate by people that know roads say it's $1.8 billion a year for 10 years. Well, this won't even bring in 1.8. It's the old 1.2 from 2 years ago that doesn't really apply anymore. And as I said, not all the money goes to fix the roads. There's other transportation purposes that's going to happen here. Now, they do believe that money will also generate an additional, if approved by you, an additional $300 million for school funding. That's only $200 more per pupil in Michigan a year. That is, chump change when it comes to the need of $1.2 or $1.8 billion, actually, for our roads. But token little gift there to the kids. It's hardly anything at all, though, compared to what the schools need. Oh, well. And the fourth major point about this proposal, if you approve of it, this is called the Transportation Funding Plan. It's going to be on the May 2015 ballot. The fourth point is bring back the earned income tax credit for working families. That's how the Republicans got the Democrats to go along with this. And you say, well, Republicans are in the majority. Yeah, but because it was, this is a funding thing, and to put it on the ballot, they needed two-thirds. I think that was the idea. And so they needed the Democrats to go along because they waited so long, and it was so late, and major funding bills or something like that, they would have had to approve it 2 weeks ago, something like that. There was a deadline for that. They couldn't do it now, and they didn't have anything. They didn't have a plan. They had two plans. They didn't have a definite plan. So even the Republicans couldn't get their act together 2 weeks ago on this, even though they've got the Republican governor that told them how to do it. But why listen to him? He's only the governor. No, that doesn't mean anything. He's only the leader of your political party in the state, in theory. That earning income tax credit, though, for working families, that is significant. And I look at MLive, MLive.com, and their report from early this morning that, of course, that was eliminated by Republicans a year or two ago. I think it was in lame duck also. Because, hey, those poor people, they don't need any money. And they don't need any. If they're poor, it's all their fault, I guess. I don't know. In any event. They fully restored it to where it was before. So when you're doing your taxes in Michigan, if your income is low enough, you can get back, well, it says they've reestablished it to 20% of the federal level. I guess whatever that means, the federal earned income after you do your federal taxes, then you do your state taxes. And how big was that cut? It still existed, but in 2011, that's 3 years ago, actually, the Republicans cut it from 20% of the federal level to 6%, which is hardly any credit at all. So they get no credit for themselves for doing that to the poorest people. And they needed the money for something. What'd they spend it on? Oh, that's right. In order to make up for the money that the state loses from reducing the business tax in Michigan. So they made it up by one of the ways is by cutting the earned income tax credit. So the Democrats went along basically because they were never in favor of cutting out the earned income tax credit, and that's how this proposal got passed. But of course, if you vote it down in May, and that's going to be a bitter campaign, okay, then nothing that will happen. So the earned income tax credit won't be reestablished, and our roads won't be fixed at all, and we're in a bigger mess because nothing has happened for so long. So there you go. Yep. That's our legislature for you. And I don't think you can blame George Dorney. Number one, as a Democrat, they couldn't get anything they wanted. But they did go along with this. Because, well, eventually it'll kind of help a little bit fix some roads. And the earned income tax credit would be good. But, of course, you've got to vote on it. And that means that every time you go to buy something, with the exception, of course, of food and grocery stores are not taxed in Michigan, nor drugs, prescription drugs. And part of it, too, I don't have the details right now that I'm directly looking at, is that you won't be paying that 7% on your gasoline. And gasoline taxes will be done a little bit differently. So there you go. So. But they are going to convert 19 cent per gallon gasoline and 15% diesel taxes to a wholesale version. And this has been, so it won't be getting retail taxes. It'll be taxing it when it's sold from, I guess, the distributor, the gas companies, to the gas stations. Well, don't you think they're going to pass that along to you? And by the way, apparently that's going to vary wildly. You say, well, gas prices go up and down a lot now. Wait until they start, if you approve of it, they start this taxing of the wholesale price. Oh, yeah, you won't see it directly at the pump, so-called, in terms of additional tax being added there. But it's going to affect the prices up and down wildly. And I don't see how the owners of a gas station who have to pay more for the gas that they get to sell to you wouldn't want to pass that along. Okay, because theoretically, the sales tax, they always got to take exactly every penny of that and send it to the state. That doesn't get them anything. But now the tax on the wholesale gas that they have to pay, they're going to pass along to you. So I'm not saying I'm going to vote yes or no, and I'm not going to tell you anyway because I don't want anybody voting how I do and then blaming me when May 15th comes along. But it doesn't sound like a good plan. I can say that because we thank Henry Ford Community College for allowing us to speak opinions that are somewhat rational anyway. And remember that none of these opinions that you hear on the WHFR Journal or any of our other talk shows are necessarily those of anyone else here at Henry Ford College, and they don't tell us to say them. Okay? They do not put words into our mouths that we are forced to speak to you. Only little thing I can see here is that they're eliminating some annual vehicle registration fee discounts. They are increasing fees for heavy trucks. But get this, you buy an electric car or hybrid vehicle, doesn't use as much gas, does it? Cleaner for the environment, right? Well, this new bill would put new surcharges when you buy your license plate tags on those kinds of electric and hybrid vehicles. Because you use the roads, you drive on the roads, shame on you for buying a fuel-efficient, less polluting vehicle. You should be encouraging that, folks. So that's, again, that's a stupid argument. Stupid, stupid, stupid. Most electric and hybrid cars are lighter in weight. Now, there is some dispute there, but a lighter weight vehicle does not do as much damage to our roads, as it doesn't destroy them as quickly as a heavier vehicle does. But they're going to put an extra surcharge on that, because shame on you for doing the right thing and trying to get a fuel-efficient and environmental-friendly vehicle. So that's crazy. They're listening to the wrong people there, and that's obviously Republicans who don't want you to really have an environmentally-friendly car because our poor oil companies won't make as much money. What are they going to do? Well, they're going to run out of oil anyway. And you say, well, oil is so cheap now, there must be a ton of it. It's not going to stay that way, folks, for very long. And in fact, you say, well, there's all that shale oil. Well, fracking, which is the only way you can really get shale oil these days, is about all we got left is shale oil, at least in this country. And it's bad for the environment. The whole state of New York, did you see this 2 days ago? Did you hear this? The governor there just banned it for health reasons. No more fracking in the state of New York at all can happen. Why? It is not healthy. Okay? Maybe you've seen some of those crazy documentaries with people nearby, near the fracking where it's being done or done badly, and it's usually done without too much regulation, so it could be going bad most of the time. It could be. I'm just saying could be. And they turn on their water faucet and it bursts into flames because of the methane gas gets into the water supply. So even their water supply is tainted by different fluids, chemicals underground that they're injecting to make this fracking possible. Yeah, toxic chemicals, cancer-causing chemicals they use as part of the fracking process to get at the oil. So I hope there's a trend there. The state of New York should not be the only state to do the right thing. But you say, well, then we won't have any oil. Well, we don't need oil, folks. Long term, we won't have oil anyway because even the shale oil will be gone. 50 to 100 years, what's left will be too expensive and too toxic to get out of the ground. So why not start doing the right thing now? Solar and wind power. And like our new train station here in Dearborn that we'll talk about in a moment, they got solar panels on the roof and geothermal heating and cooling underground. If you haven't heard about geothermal, it's something that's hard to retrofit on a house. But when you're building new buildings and you're going to dig down for a foundation, it's pretty easy to put in the ground, and then you cover it over, of course, and plant trees and flowers and grass on top. But it has to be, it's a lot of piping and things have to be installed under the ground where it stays relatively warm in winter and relatively cool in summer. 4 to 5 feet down, I think they're talking about usually. Maybe less, maybe more, I don't know. But and a lot of people, you can retrofit your house right in Dearborn with geothermal, but you got to have a fairly large amount of land space, because they have to dig up all the ground down to those levels in order to put the piping in for the system. Oh, it saves lots of money. And boy, it can even generate, generate tremendous savings for everybody. So solar, wind, geothermal in this area, no problem. We don't need oil. We don't need nuclear power. And you know, Monroe Power Plant, Fermi 1 and Fermi 2. Fermi 1 is sealed, out of commission. Fermi 2, they're trying to reauthorize. Well, when these plants get old, they start leaking. And you can't really fix them because they're so radioactive, you die trying to fix them. Should it be recommissioned? No. Plants all around the country have not gotten this approval. Because, well, first of all, there's no plan on what to do when they finally do break down so much, where to put the radioactive fuel rods, which have to be stored securely for at least 50,000 years, if not 100,000 years, or they'll kill us all. Okay? Nuclear power was a bad idea to start with, if you look at the consequences down the road. Oh, that's right. We don't have good roads in Michigan, so we can't even look down the road in Michigan. You like that? You like that metaphor, how I turned that phrase? Well, if not, it's a holiday season. Try to be generous here. Okay, what else? The only other major thing, a lot of bills about teaching that didn't get passed. Third grade reading retention. A through F school grades on standardized testing. Expansion of the Educational Achievement Authority. Educator evaluation. Financial early warning. Attacks on the Michigan Public School employee retirement system, repeal of prevailing wage, rigging the Electoral College, teacher merit pay, and Michigan Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which a few Republicans have sworn, like the new majority leader Republican in the House has sworn he's going to pass that. That means that you can, if you're a business, you can deny service to anybody you want to if you don't like their lifestyle. Well, I think they're going to, even if that's passed, there's going to be a lot of businesses that will be heavy-duty boycotted. I've already found out about companies that are doing that sort of thing. And they want to sell products, but they don't want to sell to everybody. No, because there's some people, they don't like the lifestyle. They don't like their choices. Well, that's none of their business. They're in business to sell a product. They should stick to it. You know what I think? If they don't want to do business to everybody that wants to buy, they should go out of business. They deserve it. I'm being very harsh. This is not a war on small business like some editorial writer wrote. I'm not part of that. I'm talking about all business here. We're talking about big business and small business. If you don't want to sell your product to everybody that wants to buy it, that feels that they need it, then you shouldn't have a business. You know, keep your nose out of social issues. Maybe you sell more if you treat everyone equitably. My goodness. So I have, you know, I'm fine. If I don't like a business because of, if this passes and I don't like a business because they're not selling to everybody, I'm not going to do business with them. I'll show them, and everybody else should too. And we should picket, and we should boycott, and we should let the whole world know which businesses are open to business with everybody, no matter what their social choices are, and which are not. Maybe we could have a whole state somewhere. Pick a state, like Texas, not Austin, but everywhere else in Texas, and let all these people that want to have their so-called religious freedom to not sell, to not accommodate, to not help anybody else that they for whatever reasons, and they get to choose them. It's not what their church says. It's whatever they interpret their church is telling them they should be doing. So ultimately, everybody makes their own choices. What kind of rules do we have in society? We don't have any. Everybody's selling or not selling. I don't like you. You're wearing brown shoes. Today is not the day for brown shoes. That's how I think my religion... I mean, that's crazy, isn't it, for me to say it that way? I'm exaggerating. Am I? I don't know. The Amazon tax bill did get out of the House. The bill's already passed the Senate. And so Governor Schneider will probably, he's going to consider it. We don't know if he'll sign it or not. A lot of people, including a lot of Republicans, are against it. Against the tax of internet companies doing business to people in Michigan. Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. That's your update on that. Here's a couple of commentaries now. It's about halfway through our hour. This is the new WHFR Journal for Friday, December 19th, 2014. That's a couple of commentaries from Jack Lessenberry.
There's a reason college professors historically were given tenure. It was so they couldn't be fired for politically unpopular views. There have been times when intellectuals were fired, persecuted, even killed for unpopular views. Views such as the once horrifying ideas that blacks were the intellectual and social equals of whites, or that women should have the right to vote. Well, every social and scientific advance has started with an unpopular idea. Back to that crazy guy who thought the world went around the sun. That doesn't mean lots of controversial ideas aren't stupid. Many are. But what makes America special is that we have a complete right to express them, thanks to the First Amendment to our Constitution. Congress shall make no law abridging freedom of speech or of the press, etc. Well, apparently State Republican Party Chair Bobby Shostak hasn't read the Constitution. He and other Republicans want University of Michigan professor Susan Douglas, a nationally respected communications scholar, forced to resign for a column on a website called In These Times. The column begins, "I hate Republicans. I can't stand the thought of having to spend the next 2 years watching Mitch McConnell, John Boehner, Ted Cruz, or any of the legions of other blowhards denying climate change, thwarting immigration reform, or championing fetal personhood." While this has given some people fits, it seems clear that many of those denouncing the column haven't actually read much of it. Shostak is clearly one of these. Forgetting the First Amendment, he says, it should not be tolerated by the University of Michigan. And he denounces Douglas for supposedly isolating students because of their political ideology. She doesn't do that. Douglas's column is, in fact, a denunciation of polarization and intolerance. She blames today's Republican Party for being most guilty of this and puts forth evidence to support this claim. But she clearly isn't saying she hates Republicans in the way Nazis hated Jews. She hates the spirit of intolerance, dogmatism, and intellectual rigidity coming from so many Republicans today. Years ago, she notes, she worked for the Republican leader in the Rhode Island State Senate and so admired and respected him, she could have imagined marrying him had he been younger. Today, the nation is far more polarized, something she laments. Her column is a compelling argument that the GOP is most guilty of this. Douglas ends by saying she misses the moderate, rational, reasonable Republican she once knew and the civilized discourse and political accomplishments they made possible. You can agree or not. But she has every right to say this. Shostak is a paid political functionary, but U of M Regent Andrea Fisher Newman, who also denounced the column for what it was not, should know better. Susan Douglas's most important charge, I think, is that Republicans have crafted a political identity that rests on a complete repudiation of the idea that the opposing party and its followers have any legitimacy at all. Anyone who watches Fox News knows what she means. Republicans have every right to take issue with Douglas. But it's hard to see how they can unless they seriously address this charge as well. There's a time-honored political technique you might call the big lie theory. Basically, it works this way. If you tell the same outrageous lie over and over, no matter how big it is, eventually people will believe that at least some part of it is true. The latest and best example of this was uttered by one Ari Adler, the mouthpiece for Jace Bolger, the lame duck speaker of the Michigan House of Representatives. Yesterday, his boss admitted what everybody should already have known, that efforts to expand the state's Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act are going nowhere. There won't even be a vote in the legislature on this. After Bolger admitted this, Adler launched his lie, saying, "The extremists on the left were successful in preventing civil rights protections for gays and lesbians in Michigan." What they want you to think is that Republicans are all set to protect those folks but were dragged down by the far left's insistence on extending civil rights to those scary transsexuals. That's not at all true, though it's interesting that Republicans today at least don't want to appear bigoted against gays. A few years ago, they wouldn't have worried about that. But here's what's really going on here. Prior to the lame duck session, Bolger indicated he might be willing to expand Elliot Larson to include sexual orientation, in other words, gay and lesbian people. But the catch was, the speaker said he'd be willing to do so only if it could be coupled with a poison pill, his so-called Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which would have essentially permitted people to discriminate against anyone whose lifestyle they disapproved. Civil rights supporters would, they know, never go along with this. Even if they had, I doubt many Republicans would have supported even a meaningless expansion of Elliot Larson. That the game was over was clear last week, when the man who takes over as House Speaker next year, Kevin Cotter, said he was in favor of passing the bogus Religious Freedom Restoration Act without expanding Elliot Larson at all. However, the cold fact is that supporters of civil rights for gay Americans didn't lose their battle then. They lost it August 5th, when State Representative Frank Foster of Petoskey, the only Republican to endorse expanding Elliot Larson, was beaten in his primary over this very issue. After that, and after the GOP not only held on to the legislative majorities but increased them, it was clear there was no way there'd be any expansion of civil rights for non-heterosexuals. If there's any silver lining, it's that Republicans now feel compelled to at least pretend they favor civil rights for gays, if not transgendered human beings. This also may have been the making of a new career for Frank Foster, who emerged as somewhat of a civil rights hero. Had he won his primary, he would probably have served out his term as a little-known backbench representative. But for those of different sexual orientation or gender identity, it should be clear that Michigan government will do nothing for you. Not in the next few years in any event. For now, their hopes must lie in the federal courts.
I thought you'd enjoy a little bit of one of my favorite holiday songs. And it's, of course, from the big animated Polar Express movie. Everybody calls it the Tom Hanks movie, but he's really not in it, you know. It's animated. Okay, I'm sorry, it's his voice. Oh, yeah. And they did motion capture, so his body movements are Tom Hanks. Okay, fine. And that was the probably the most spirit-filled version of the Spirit of the Season. And I think that was the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. Yeah, that did that version. Well, this is the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views. Jay Koronick with you today. And hope your season is moving along smoothly. Getting back to the news. We did the legislative update, and you heard some commentaries. Jack Lesenberry and I agree on the, certainly on their so-called Religious Freedom and Reformation Act, or whatever it's called. Stupid. But it might come back to haunt us next year, because those few people who voted, not everybody did, you know, last time around, they decided, oh, they want more of the above. Okay. You want more of it? Okay. You know, an awful lot of people are going to be suffering if this goes ahead. And the little increase in the income tax proposal, rather than doing things that are the right thing to do, that take courage, of course, that's not going to come up till May, and the roads further deteriorate. And good job not done. Good job not done, legislature. That's what I say to you. And no one in particular, but all of you together. Okay? Probably not okay. All right. Dearborn Press and Guide from last Sunday. District 7 will seek a bond issue. Okay, that's in Dearborn Heights. And at their meeting a little while ago in December, they agreed to go out for a bond for the first time this century. Of course, we're only 14 years into the century, but they want to make it sound like it's they never, ever do it. And that's not true. But they also came up with a great idea, besides trying to raise money, and it's primarily for technology. And everybody knows we need technology for all kinds of things. And we need to train our students in how to be tied to computers day and night. That's important. Satire, okay, don't just have to give you the title. It's not television. You can't see the expression on my face. This is radio. So, again, look up that word, satire. They also agreed, besides taking this proposal to their voters in Dearborn Heights District 7, they agreed to allow the new superintendent to take an indefinite leave. And I don't know what that's about, but that is really unusual, isn't it? They got a new superintendent, and apparently school board president Lori Fujita, she would not elaborate on why he left, how long he would be gone, or whether he would return. An employee, she said, on a personal leave has a right to privacy. But they just hired him. Supposed to start work on July 1st. Well, we all hope his personal reasons, whatever they are, you know, able to be resolved. And so their assistant superintendent, a Carol Beverwick, is serving as superintendent. Beverwick was a finalist for the superintendent's job. So I guess she felt like she could move in there. And, okay. And let's see what else is coming up there. And also, two of their longtime board members left. And we just lost three in Dearborn, but we gained three new, and so we'll see how things go with that. Craig Foran, last Sunday, wrote a long editorial after the torture report came out, the national report on torture that we've done a few years ago, waterboarding and other kinds of unnatural, inhumane activities, supposedly for a really good purpose. which the report indicates that information is totally never got anything that was useful to anybody, and it's not a process that just does it make you feel really good to torture somebody, and then they talk, but what they say is really not important or valuable, or in fact you're torturing the wrong person because the person you're torturing is innocent and couldn't talk if they wanted to, even if their head wasn't below water, because they don't know anything. That's got to be the worst kind of situation. A person is being tortured, and they're not the right person. And they couldn't, I'll talk, but I don't know anything. You know, because they don't believe you. Oh, no, you're guilty. You know a lot. If you listen to Democracy Now! Right preceding the show today on 1219, you can go to the website and hear that episode again, by the way, democracynow.org. Yeah. That they were talking about this torture report, and it's a long document. So there's a lot of ins and outs, but they indicated that, you know, one fellow in particular, they found out that after they captured him, imprisoned him without right of trial or lawyer or anything like that, he wasn't guilty. They found that out. He was innocent. But they wanted to keep him and torture him anyway because it would look bad to just release him, because then people would know that they arrest illegally the wrong person. So just keep him and torture him anyway. You know, maybe we'll give you a Social Security number or something. You know, I mean, just, you know, it would look bad for us as a CIA if people knew that we grabbed people that weren't actually guilty of anything. Well, how much worse does it look now when you actually know that they're not guilty and you won't release them? Like a good portion of the people in Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. We know they're not guilty of anything. Why don't we release them? Well, they don't look good. Or they got friends who might be bad people. But they didn't do anything, did they? Not a thing. Let them go. What kind of country are we coming to? Well, that's a summary of what Craig Foran was saying. And, of course, he's got people that read his column and don't like it. I'd like to believe that they're just critically thinking around what he says. So he usually has to write, after a strong column, he has to write a column responding to his critics. So I thought I'd share that with you in the spirit of the holidays. We don't want to ever torture people, especially for no reason, because torture doesn't result in anything productive for them or us. So here's Craig Ferrand. Hello, Dearborn, Dearborn Heights, out of touch, or worse. That's how some readers describe me or inferred about my view of life after they read my last column about American torture. Let's see, one wrote. They cut off our heads, record it, then put it online. We pour water on their faces, and we are the bad guy? Unquote. Quote, once again, your left-leaning title, a tilt amazes me. I fail to understand why this paper gives you a half page when you are so out of touch. Unquote. And he responds. Another didn't write any words. Instead, he sent me a photo of someone hurling to their death after jumping from one of the Twin Towers on 9/11. The caption below the horrific image read, I don't care how terrorists were treated while we were getting information about new attacks. Quote, unquote. My response, Craig Foran's response, is to both, is simple. Out of touch with whom? People who think the answer is to act in the same barbaric fashion as those who would do us harm? I always thought, or maybe it's just an empty hope, that we saw ourselves as better than that. That as a people, we live in one of the most, if not the most, improbable society in the history of mankind. Improbable because of everything we do that runs counter to the basest of human proclivities. It's amazing how hard we work every day to balance those human failings against something larger than us all. Yes, we kill each other, we go to war, yet we abide by a guiding principle that says each human life is precious, that each person is, quote, endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, unquote. How do we do this? How do we strike a balance? It isn't easy. We've been struggling with this since our nation's founding. Yet we hold these truths to be self-evident, as Jefferson wrote, because we fight to protect those rights at every turn. We fight discrimination, inequality, and hatred. Inequality, I said, and hatred. And we do most powerfully when we do it peaceably, When we march and exercise that fifth and I think most important right of the First Amendment, a right to petition our government for a redress of grievances, we have a right to complain loudly and repeatedly. That's part of who we were. We've also been a beacon of hope to peoples around the world who didn't and don't enjoy the same privileges of fundamental freedom we take for granted all too often. We've been a bastion of democracy writ large across the pages of the 20th century, a leader in world affairs, a moral guide for those seeking guidance. That's also part of who we were. Notice I said were, because if I were to believe these two writers and the thousands, if not millions, of others who share their views, then that's not who we are anymore. And not only are we smaller for it, we threaten to become irrelevant. Think on it. If we can no longer speak from high moral ground, then why should anyone else listen? And if we're so willing to debase our ideals for some quick fix to our problems. Oh yeah, I'm adding this myself now. Like the Iraq War was a quick fix. The Afghanistan War is a quick fix, which we're still involved in. No. So your so-called quick fix, let's go kill them. It's not exactly a quick fix, is it? They've caused those terrorists on 9/11. This is my commentary. They've caused such havoc to this country. Such massive trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars of debt that we spent, thousands and thousands of our soldiers killed, and we've killed tens of thousands and tens of thousands of innocent people worldwide. I think the terrorists of 9/11, they won. Boy, they got us deeply in debt. They got us heavily divided. They got us becoming not the moral high ground leader we were shortly after 9/11, but probably one of the most despised nations in the world for what we've become. And that's my commentary. And you can read the rest of Craig Foran's commentary in his very well-stated editorial. And he's featured in both the Sunday and the Wednesday editions. I mean, if there was a so-called conservative point of view on this, who was as open-minded and as articulate as Craig Foran, sure, the Press and Guide should put him in there. I mean, you know, I am looking at that war on small business fellow, Reagan Ford. He wrote that page, and that's, I don't agree with that, but he's expressing a point, okay? And that's okay. But they need somebody, if it's possible to find someone, who's as open-minded and articulate as Craig Foran. But should they take him out of the paper? No, of course they shouldn't. I think that's what papers should be for. Community viewpoints on the editorial page. On the editorial page. All the other pages don't do it. Let's do it there. Only about 8 minutes left in this show. Now time flies when you're having fun. Let's see. My congratulations go to Dearborn Heights because they finally added an animal control department, an official department. It's back anyway after a 3-year absence because of budget cuts. And so they'll handle animal patrol as well as the regular ordinances in the ordinance department. And so that's a little bit unique. They're going to give, tickets to people that don't follow regulations about their homes and businesses, and also take care of the animals. And they use a very bad metaphor here, describing how they're going to go about doing it. The Ordnance Department Director Jack McIntyre said, "We can kind of kill two birds with one stone when we get out to a house for an animal issue." I don't think animal control people should be talking about killing birds. I know it was a metaphor. But you shouldn't do it that way. So I hope, Jack, you might want to reconsider your language now that you're trying to take care of animals and be nice to them rather than killing them, even with only one stone. Had to point that out. Our new train station opened officially. It was dedicated without John Dingell. He fractured his hip. Probably heard about that. His doctors would not allow him to attend. Debbie Dingell attended. It was such a large group that there wasn't enough parking. The bathrooms were totally crowded because I know in the men's there was only two toilets and two urinals. That's right. Only four men at a time choosing which way they want to go can be accommodated in the restrooms of the train station. Because the train station, you're not supposed to stay there. And the train always arrives on time. But in fact, they recommend 20 minutes to 45 minutes advance before you get on the train. So just don't rush the bathrooms all at once, folks. I'm sure the women's is not too much larger. I haven't checked it out, though. Bike racks? Because it's multimodal. It's a transit center, for Pete's sake. Yeah, there's 10 rings in the ground, I assume, for attaching 10 or maybe 20 bikes, if two people can use the same ring in the ground, metal ring. Of course, no protection for the bike. There's no cover for the bike. Why should there be a cover? Because people riding bikes don't like to have to get off the train and then have a wet seat to sit on and have their chains starting to rust and so on because they got wet. Even University of Michigan Dearborn has bike racks that are covered for the students that want to ride a bike to University of Michigan Dearborn. Of course, we don't here at Henry Ford College. But, you know, don't tell me this is a multimodal design. It's only a design for cars, people. The so-called bike path doesn't go anywhere. It's across the street, and it goes to U of M Dearborn and Henry Ford College. And that's where it goes. It doesn't even get to. There's no real way to safely. Well, okay, there's a separate traffic light now to walk your bike across the road to get to Fairlane Town Center. But, you know, that's not equal status for bicycles at all. So whoever planned it doesn't know anything about bicycles, obviously. And I suggest to our city development department that they ought to. I don't know how many people come on each of the six trains a day, but if they put more trains on, there's high-speed rail, and they finally make an entrance to Henry Ford, the Henry Ford, that's Greenfield Village, which they haven't yet. And I talked to the president of the Henry Ford, Patricia Moradian, and well, we're not sure exactly what to do, and we have to decide, if we want a ticket booth or they have to come up with their own money to build it, to build that entrance on the other side of the tracks there, on the south side of the tracks. And so they haven't done it yet. But if they did, and they got people arriving by train to go to the village, then there's going to be more people than ever. And I have to say, folks, okay, $28 million, that train station isn't big enough. Any sort of future growth, it won't be big enough. You could tell that. And it's not just because we overloaded the place with the press preview and the open house. But it's a small step in the other direction, in the right direction, but and maybe there's room, I don't know where, to make it bigger. But it's not enough. But you know, baby steps. Future generations will, like 3 years away, will clearly prove it's not big enough and it doesn't have enough facilities and it doesn't do anything for bicyclists that's worth anything. Okay. But it looks nice and it is, as I said, eco-friendly, except in those bathrooms. Here at Henry Ford College, we have waterless urinals. They save 40,000 gallons a year in a busy public place because they take the liquid and I don't know, it somehow goes out and it's amazing. They couldn't afford waterless urinals. If they're so concerned about ecology, they could have done more. I mean, how much would two waterless urinals cost over two regular urinals? Well, you're picky. No, it was a great event, and we wish John Dingell well for a speedy recovery. He's already voted his last time in Congress, and now it's Debbie Dingell taking over his same elected seat, in fact, as they say. Okay. Well, there's other stuff. Maybe next week. Because it's a slow news time. What else could happen, right, in the world or locally this time of year? Maybe we'll actually get some opinions in from other than Craig Foran, too, and Jack Lessenberry, that I've been stacking up. I've been saving opinions. You can do that with opinions, you know. Okay. Well, in 1897, on the advice of her father, 8-year-old Virginia O'Hanlon wrote a short letter to the editor of New York's now-defunct newspaper, The Sun, in which she sought confirmation of Santa Claus's existence. And here's the letter. Dear editor, I'm 8 years old. Some of my little friends say there is no Santa Claus. Papa says, if you see it in the sun, it is so. Please tell me the truth. Is there a Santa Claus? Santa Claus? And that's from Virginia O'Hanlon. The answer from the editor. His name was Francis Forcellus Church. This is Mr. Church's answer. Virginia, your little friends are wrong. They've been affected by the skepticism of a skeptical age. They do not believe except what they see. They think that nothing can be which is not comprehensible by their little minds. All minds, Virginia, whether they be men's or children's, are little. In this great universe of ours, man is a mere insect, an ant, in his intellect, as compared with the boundless world about him, as measured by the intelligence capable of grasping the whole of truth and knowledge. Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. He exists as certainly as love and generosity and devotion exist, and you know that they abound and give to your life its highest beauty and joy. Alas, how dreary would be the world if there were no Santa Claus. It would be as dreary as if there were no Virginias. There would be no childlike faith then, no poetry, no romance to make tolerable this existence. We should have no enjoyment except in sense and sight. The eternal light from which childhood fills the world would be extinguished. Not believe in Santa Claus? You might as well not believe in fairies. You might get your papa to hire men to watch in all the chimneys on Christmas Eve to catch Santa Claus. But even if they did not see Santa Claus coming down, what would that prove? Nobody sees Santa Claus, but that is no sign that there is no Santa Claus. The most real things in the world are those that neither children nor men can see. Did you ever see fairies dancing on the lawn? Of course not. But that's no proof that they're not there. Nobody can conceive or imagine all the wonders that are unseen and unseeable in this world. You may tear apart the baby's rattle and see what makes the noise inside, but there is a veil covering the unseen world which may not the strongest man, nor even the united strength of all the strongest men that ever lived, could tear apart. Only faith, fancy, poetry, love, romance can push aside that curtain and view and picture the supernatural beauty and glory beyond. Is it all real? Ah, Virginia, in all this world, there is nothing else real and abiding. No Santa Claus? Thank God, he lives, and he lives forever